The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or to view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
It's multidisciplinary. It works with musicians, dancers, actors, poets, visual artists, children, people with disabilities, politicians, lawyers. Like next year I'm doing a piece in New York with 7 New York City trial lawyers. So the sound painting is made up of trial lawyers. Well, and 3 years ago in Norway, I had a chorus of 100 politicians where I taught them sound painting and did a piece with them. The year before in Oslo, I did a 125 circus performance. You know, so but what is this? You know, what is it that I'm going to teach you? When you think about the name sound painting, you think right away, oh, it must be like listening to something and then painting. Like, no, not at all. It's just a name my brother gave it back in the late 80s. He just said, oh, this, what you're doing kind of reminds me of, my father was an abstract expressionist painter, and this kind of reminds me in some way of how he was composing. So that's what my brother said, and the name stuck. So anyway, what is it? How did it come about? In the 70s, I just got out of Berklee School of Music. I'm studying composition, woodwinds, percussion, and I moved to Woodstock, New York, where I had a summer home. And there's a school there called the Creative Music School that was formed by Carl Berger, Ornette Coleman, and Don Cherry. And all kinds of great composers would come through there. Everybody from Cage to Braxton to Carlos Santana to Carla Bley. I mean, it was just a really cool school. They would stay for 2 weeks, like it might be a group of people like yourselves, maybe twice this amount, and you would work with this composer for like 2 weeks and do a concert with them. So that's how you learned about music, you know, or about dance, or about whatever the visiting artist was bringing. So this school would let off in the summertime, and they would leave all these musicians and dancers in town, like Woodstock, which is only like 3,000 people. So I formed my first orchestra, it was 1974, and I arranged a few concerts, and I'm a trained composer, woodwind player, and percussionist, and so I wrote some music that had like, you know, like I would write maybe 3 or 4 or 5 bars and then leave an open space and put a triangle in there, which to me was that meant improvisation. And the idea of the improvisation was that when you got to this window of improvisation, you had to develop your improvisation thematically based on what had come previous to this window. You know, it's like taking, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb and improvising around that, but always showing something about Mary Had a Little Lamb, even though you might move away from it. And so they were doing this in concert. So a solo came up, and this is how I came up with sound painting. And so a guy's like playing a solo, and like 7 dancers, 25 musicians, and little bits of music with this windows of improvisation. The improvisation was kind of going away from what I had planned. And I'm standing there going, well, what can I do to make this happen, you know? So I'll just make up some iconic gestures to see if I can get something to happen. So I looked at a few people in front of them, and I went like this, and I pointed at a few people, and said, come on, come on, come on. Seeing like a long sound, you know, it looks pretty obvious, right? And it must be on one, something long, you know, so a trumpeter is going to play a long tone, or a violin's going to do a long sound. It worked, you know, so I was able to structure some stuff behind the improvisers. Then, a little bit later in the piece, I pointed at a few more people, and I went like this, and pointed at a few more people. I mean, pointillism, like something very arrhythmic and ragged, you know? I said, come on, do that, you know? And it worked. And so I thought, oh, this is interesting, you know? I like this. And for the next few years, I developed maybe 10 or 15 signs. And I didn't think much about it, it's just something I did. Then I moved to New York City in 1980 and formed my orchestra that's been together all these years. And they liked what I was doing. So they said, why don't you continue developing that? So now, you know, and then I got a commission from Lincoln Center to work with, had to work with the audience, and so I brought actors into it. So after I developed the language, I had 150 signs at this point. I brought actors into it. So I've been a musical director for a theater company for a long time. in New York City, Downtown Theater Company, Experimental Theater Company. And so I bring these actors in and I teach them sound painting. You know, now they're doing the same gestures. They're doing a long tone, or they're doing pointillism, or they're doing minimalism, or they're doing these other gestures, and I'll teach you some of them. And then my world, they completely opened up for me. I was like, wow, this is really cool, like putting some actors right in the ensemble. Not the actors standing up here and reciting and the orchestra playing behind them, but the actors were equal with the musicians. So the boundaries broke down. And that just opened up for me, so I kept developing that. Then I added dance and I added the visual arts. And then I started working with children and working with people with disabilities. And I realized that anybody can learn this language. It has nothing to do with being a performer. Anybody can learn it. You know, but it comes from being a composer. So what do? I traveled around all over the place. You know, I got fed up with New York after living there 20-something years. And I said, well, I want to take this out in the world. So about 10 years ago, I started traveling a lot. And 12 years ago, I got an invitation from Dave Liebman, a saxophone player. Dave invited me to come to a conference in Santiago de Compostela in Spain. And from there, it just opened up for me. One of the professors at the Paris Conservatoire, he brought me in, taught sound painting. I moved to Sweden, and I've been over there since. And so sound painting is a very popular thing in France. It's very, very popular, and I'm happy about that. You know, I'm an artist who started doing something for fun, this whole signing thing, and now it's blown up into something that's, some in the United States, it's taught a bit at Berkeley, and it's around quite a number of places in New York and different schools around the country, but it's not blown up the way here as it's done in France, but and Sweden and Norway and whatnot, but it's a new language of only 34 years, and it's something that anybody can use in a small way or in a very large, complicated way. So that's it. Let's learn it. You use your voices, okay? And it has nothing to do with being a great singer. Don't worry about that. So there's a syntax, you know, and that I'm always working with, and it's because this is live composing. You know, I can sign, you know, if, you know, to play in certain styles and certain chords and certain note durations and all kinds of stuff, you know. There's over 1,000 gestures, you know, so it's endless as to what you can do. So the syntax is who, what, how, and that's sometimes, and when. And then there's what's called modes. And of course, this is just kind of a basic, it gets deeper than this. I'm publishing these workbooks and dictionary now, and it's made me have to really think about this over these past years. I can speak about it, but in writing and whatnot, it's a lot different than speak about it. So who, and in this case, the sign for the whole group, if you want the entire ensemble, you say whole group. And then you say what you want, and it's a long tone. So I say who, what, and then we say how. You know, and this is getting louder and getting softer. So I said, whole group, long tone, pianissimo. And now, you know, not yet. You don't do anything. And then at the end of my hands like that, you play. And that's that simple. But what you, this is the middle of your instrument. This is the high part of your instrument. This is the low part. Just speaking about sound. So when you come in with a pitch, say you're a half step apart or something, you don't change it. If you come in louder or softer, then, well, if I don't say how, then you choose if you want to be louder or be softer, and that's okay, piano, that's a forte. But if I say pianissimo, then you have to be pianissimo. So you come to take a middle tone in your voice, and when you run out of air and try to stagger breathe, go back to the pitch again. I'll make it louder, make it softer, and I say, whole group, stop. Okay? I'll get rid of my. In Sweden, we eat candy that has salt in it. And that's probably the hardest thing I had to do to get used to that. Salt in the candy. It's really weird. But it tastes good. I hated it. At first, I spit it out when I first had it. I wish I had enough to hand it out for you. Because you'd all spit it out, too. You know? So, let's try. So, I'll be you guys for a second. Here's what's going to happen. Ooh, ah, music continue. Take a breath, go back. Ooh, don't stop. Ooh. Okay? Simple. So who, whole group. What, long tone, middle of your voice, how, pianissimo, and then play. So now there's the high part of your voice and the low part, right? So it can go, you know, now I won't say how, you choose how. So, ooh, okay? Let's try it. Let's continue. Keep going, don't lose it yet. Keep going, not yet, not yet, not yet, and simple. So now you have a long tone. I'm going to race through these because when I work with a group, a lot of times I go in and it's an orchestra I've never met. And I sometimes, like a tour in Norway, I had an hour and a half of rehearsal to teach them 45 signs and then do a concert that day. And then go to another amateur orchestra, then go to another orchestra the next day in another small town in Norway and do the same thing. So I'm going to race through this so that you can understand enough of this, you know. Okay, so if I go whole long tone, you know, ooh, and I want to go up a half step or whole step of your choice. Ooh. Okay, simple. And you can move in. So we're just getting going, so I'll backtrack a bit so you know what's happening. Okay. So again, to go back, so it's a sign language that I'm teaching them for live composing. I'll speak again a little bit more about it. So given a who is going to play, what they're going to play, sometimes how they're going to play, and then when they play, we're using our voices. So to backtrack, who is the, it's like a sign language for the deaf in that sense, you know, like it might be one man, woman, very fine, you know, very fine speaking, sunrise, you know. But these gestures don't come from sign language for the deaf, they're gestures I've made up, or some of the other sound painters. So here's what we're doing, whole group, this time you guys go in and sing, long tone, middle of your voice. You're singing one note, don't change it, just sing it, hang on to it, take a breath, don't pass out. And then really quiet, and then do it now, every one more time. Continue. Now go up a whole step, a half step, down a whole step, a half step. Now since I have two hands, you know, I can say from you over is this hand, from you over is this hand, so I can cross them. You know? So then all of a sudden you have, remember it's live composing. If you came to see a sound painting, or I've had a chance to rehearse the group, you saw a concert, and you didn't see the music stands, it was just working with the musicians, you'd go, you know, what, did you memorize all that? It's not a free-for-all. I come out of it, this comes out of a frustration for open form improvisation. Let's try again. This time I'll do two-handed. So you over is the same. Okay. Okay, so there's hundreds of these what gestures. So now I'll move to mode. Like a whole group scanning. Now, all these ideas, some of them come from music composition. I trained with Anthony Braxton for 8 years, a great American composer. I trained with him in composition for 8 years. And it was a great influence because he used a lot of graphic notation, a lot of different ways of notating, coming out of, you know, Cage and Ives and whatnot. So some of the ideas come from my background as a composer, but I'm also a trained dancer and trained in theater and trained as a visual artist. So I have that in my background. So when I'm watching soccer, you know, I see this wave, you know, everybody stands up and I think, you know, how cool would that be to be able to make that happen with sound and actually be able to make it into a gesture? So then I came up with scanning. So now what it means in sound painting is as my hand or arm goes by, as it goes by, you do what you want the moment it lines up with you, whatever you want. But as it passes by, you stop. So then imagine you have different instruments here or using your voices or whatever. You're going to get a salad of sound. You know, you don't know what he's going to do. You don't know what he's going to do. You don't know what she's going to do. It's an individual choice. So now we know something specific, and then this gets a chance. Okay, so let's try it. Anything you want, like for you. Huh? Shh. What? Woo! Oh! Anything. As my arm goes by, as it lines up with you. Okay, good. Now, so imagine if I stop on somebody and you're going, now what you have to do is take your idea, whatever it is. Doesn't matter what it is, it's whatever you want it to be. And take that idea and develop it really, really slowly. So if it's like, I match my hand slowly. Okay? And develop that little idea. So the first thing you come out with is what you develop. You know, when it goes by and it gets a dancer moves and then goes back to neutral, moves and goes back to neutral. An actor uses their voice and uses text. Musicians use their instrument. Simple. Let's try it. Now stop on somebody and just take your idea and develop it. Now continue and listen to me. Everybody else is called to rest in it. Half of the rest of you. So you keep going because you're not resting. You're developing that. So the rest of the group, a little more, become really quiet. And you keep going. Rest of the group, out. You're still going. Rest of the group, gentle walk, out. Keep going because you're not resting.
Right.
And that takes a lot of getting used to. Just theoretically, you look at it, you know. So you're going and you're developing that, and I'm doing all these things as a second layer.
Okay.
You know?
That's why. Okay.
Yeah, that's why it is. Or this side. It doesn't matter which side I use. Like if I'm doing this, it can also be this side. It makes no difference. So let's keep it in our heads. You're going, you're doing it, and I'm bringing the group in to do different things, taking the group out, and you're still going the whole group long tone. And since I said whole group long tone, you're going to do the next step.
Come back in.
Obvious, right? So whole group do this next step. All right. Let's try one more time. Pitch up and pitch down. You know, it's like 10, something like that, 10 gestures, so it's quite easy. Like any language, it becomes more difficult the deeper you get into it. But this is the first letters and the first words of this language. So let's keep going. It's I often will, when somebody has a problem like understanding, when working with children, sometimes I don't know if anybody's going to go to music ed. But sometimes I'll use, you know, very simple graphic things like, you know, what does that sound like? Or, what does that sound like? You know, and this one is pointillism. It kind of sounded like what I did to draw it on the board. And so it's arrhythmic kind of sputtering. So I'll go whole group of pointillism and go play, and you're going to, okay? Like really like, and so if you're a drummer, you're like, you know? So it's not an easy thing to perform, and it's not noise. It's not just like this, you know, lugubrious, messy stuff. It's like, it's quite hard to be really cool pointless. So use your voices, and you're going to be like a busy street corner, you know, that's arrhythmic, you know? Okay? So the whole group of pointless, and give you pleasure, so you come right to the back, go. Here we go. Yeah, good. So now we can go from like this to a long tone. You know, go back to the. And we'll make these cuts like really, really sharp. What's called hard edge sound painting, where you take a block of one idea and you put it next to a block of another idea. Actually, this was first kind of penned by Picasso back in the early 1900s when he came up with block composing and painting. Often, ideas in the painting world precede the ideas in the music composition world, like pointillism from another one, it was early 1900s. Okay, so let's try, like this pointillism would be on channel one of our TV, so to speak, and long tones on channel two, and so when we change channels, none of this is going to go into this channel. And if your TV does that, you should get rid of it. Yeah, get a new one. Let's try it. And immediately, make that switch immediately. Here we go. Because when you hear a group, it's like, I'm going to get a boo. All right, let's try it. Okay, good, not bad. So now while you're doing this, I can take and make tempo and slow you down. So you're slowing down, you're not getting lower in sound, you're just getting slower, okay? So, same thing, and... Okay, good, fine. Let me get my list so I don't jump over something. I have, like, serious jet lag. Really, last night I was incoherent. I was having a conversation and nobody could understand me at all. Once it becomes like 7 o'clock, it's 6 hours later in my body. You know? So point to point. The whole group point to point. This is a mode also. This one's a mode. It means it sort of it encompasses, incorporates the syntax. This breaks down into 6 or 7 other parts. But this is the simplest way to work it when you first learn. So, there's lots of modes of sound painting. This one's point to point, where I go whole group point to point, and I point, it's like scanning. I point at you, you play, I take my hand away, and you stop. So, like scanning, you play what you want. But as I point at you, and if I say, and I take continue just, and I say continue, then you take what the idea that you're doing, like in scanning, and develop it slowly. Okay? Not tempo-wise. You could be doing something really quick, but you have to stay around that motif and develop it. Okay, let's try. So anything you want. Boop doo. Dun dun dun.
Boop doo.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah, simple. Right? Now, I think part something to speak about now is this, how does live composing work? Another person that's been working at something similar is a man named Butch Morris, who's a friend of mine, and he works with something called conduction, which has been doing this about the same amount of time as I have. But he works with a baton, and he has an entirely different philosophy, which I won't speak about his philosophy, but I'll speak about mine. His is just kind of counter to that in some ways. So in live composing, you're working with people, and there are going to be mistakes. And in sound painting philosophy, there's no such thing as a mistake, except for one thing, and that's stopping when you make a mistake. That's the only mistake, because if you think about it, it's live composing, so if you make a mistake, I say, whole long term play, and you come in with pointillism, you keep going with pointillism. You don't change back to long tone, because you can feel the composition kind of like fall apart when that happens. You can see, or you can hear in sound painting, someone said, oh, I made a mistake, let me go to the right place. But if it stays in the mistake, then your mistake often becomes material that I or another sound painter might work with. So for example, if that happened, and I did this, I might look at you and you might be woodwind 3. Woodwind 3, continue, rest of the group, stop. From your mistake, I have an idea. Let me work with the mistake. So it's a really, really important philosophy in working with people and composing live, because if you think, if you got to plan your life like you know what you're going to be doing 5 years from now, every day in between, that's not going to happen. It's the same thing with standing in front of an ensemble before you begin a piece. I don't have any plan if I'm not working with what we call palettes, which are pre-composed material. If I'm working with no pre-composed material, I'm just composing live. I think about the first gesture in the moment, and I begin. And if a mistake happens, then it becomes part of the piece. And you never see it or hear it. It means nothing. It's, you don't acknowledge it. So with that said, let's continue on. Pointillism, scanning, so watch me, continue, off, play, rest of the group, point to point. Okay, so let's keep going. So now I'll say hold group point to point, and I'll point to somebody, and I'll ask you to continue. So keep going, and I'll just explain a little bit. You'll develop on that idea. Now I'm going to relate to something. Look at somebody else. Say, relate to, and then give you. Now, I'll stop you for a second. So let's just imagine you're going, right? And I look at somebody else. You could be trumpet two or something, trumpet two, relate to, and you might be percussion five, trumpet two, relate to, percussion five. Slowly enter. Do this within 5 seconds. Begin your idea within 5 seconds. Stop whatever you're doing within 5 seconds. So instead of a hard edge entrance, now we can go whole group, long tone, slowly enter. And you don't crescendo in, you just simply begin at within 5 seconds. So let's imagine this. You're relating to her, but how do you relate? You can be nice, or you can be the other side of it. You can be not so nice. If you think about two actors, and I'm working with actors, this means actors, so working with an actor, actor one, improvise, slowly enter. Actor one is standing there, improvise, oh, it's such a beautiful day, my. And this actor is like really loud all the time in this improvisation. Next to him is actor two, and the sound painter says, actor two, relate to, act one, slowly enter, and this person over here is just really loud, and this one's like, it's not such a bad day. Oh, it's a wonderful, wonderful day! And it's like, you're always so loud, man. When are you going to shut up? Oh, I don't know what's going on here. I really, but that's a fine sculpture out there. And you're just an idiot. That's what we have, what I mean? This person over here could be saying, oh, you're so right, you're so right. I feel the same way you do, you know? And have this really kind of loving relate to, you know? Or it could be contrasting relate to, or it could be over the top, or it could be with a murderous intent, you know? Because I work with actors, too, so these, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I direct theater with this, or I compose theater, compose movement. So I'm saying this because in the beginning when you learn these gestures, they're wide open for you to do any of these kinds of relationships. So as a musician, you can support what the other musician's doing. Or you can contrast it and do it like what we say with blinders, which is like you don't even know they're there. But you're still responding to it because that is a response. I'm not going to pay attention to you. You know? So with that said, let's do a little point to point. I'll point at you, you know, and you play. Okay, here we go. Then I'll ask somebody to relate to and choose how you want to relate. I mean, you all chose to do something that was a close relationship to what you began with, you know? But it could have been like anything. It could be like, really, huh? You know, you can really take that and relate it in all kinds of ways, because I'm thinking like, it goes, and I'll just take it and sail on top of it in a different way. So the more you become accustomed to this, you know, way of composing, you realize, oh, it's not restricting. It's not at all restricting. It's a very, you know, sophisticated version of chord changes in jazz, where you have a specific, you know, like a dominant seventh chord, which allows you to do all kinds of things on, or something like a major triad, which is kind of restricted. You know, you have all these possibilities, but there's still these structures that you're working within. And in sound painting, we can say, you know, like a C major 7 chord configured a certain way, who plays the bass and the third or fifth, you know. But most of it comes from what you do. I impose an idea from my gestures, and then I compose the results from you. All right, so let's keep going as if we're going to do a performance tonight. Okay, so let's try. So point to point, rhythm change. Who's going to play better? Now remember, as soon as I take my hand, I'm going to stop. Okay, here we go. It's a hard one to be used to.
Ooh.
Dun-dun.
B. Yeah? A.
That's, you know, this whole, the same thing with scanning with change, you know, then you do something different every time I scan by. But in general, that's what you want to offer the live composer, she or he that's standing up here. You know, you want to give them as much stuff as possible when you're in the gestures that are chance gestures, you know, or search gestures, as we also call them. All right, let's keep going. So minimalism. You know, it's taking two or three notes and playing them over and over again without change. So I have a whole group of minimalism watching me. I'll give you four beats, and then I'll bring you in, and you choose something. It could be an actor might go, you know, so minimalism, I'll be an actor. Four beats. Right! Not that. Right! Not that. Right! Not that. Right! You know, and I just keep repeating that until this change gesture comes up. Right! Not that. Right! Not that. Right! Not that. Oh, sure, right. Oh, sure, right. Oh, sure, right. Okay? So you look for the change gesture, and then on my loop, you change to the next. Let's try. So dancers are moving, and they're repeating a movement, very short phrase, you know. Actors are working with text. Visual artists, so I won't speak much about that, because it's working with a repetition of shape, of somehow, in some way. And of course, musicians are working with a repeating pattern. It's minimalist, not maximalist. You know, it's very short. But you repeat it over and over again.
You repeat it within the bar. I mean, sorry.
It doesn't have to be in 4/4. I'm only giving you four beats just as a way to get started. If I wanted it to be in 4/4, I'd say with a 4 feel, and that means you have to be in 4. In 4. But otherwise, if you want to do it in 7 or 15 or 5, you know, 2.5, that's up to you. Okay? Okay, now I heard a little bit of change. Make it happen right in the beginning. Whatever you do, don't change. And so now we're going to, and everybody's just, you know, you're just learning this, and you're, you know, it's always in the beginning, everybody feels a little timid, you know, about it. So now I'm going to ask you to do it loud. So minimalism, loud, and I'm going to say with intensity. So you know you could go, and use the voice and clapping or stomping the something, you know. All right? So really, like, pop it out. So we can really hear what you're doing. Let's try it. So, sorry, hold on. I do this all the time. This is what I do as far as what I do every day. You know, this is a sound painter where I'm working in education or I'm getting ready for a piece, you know. So I don't get as much time to play my saxophone. But I do play in the Swedish sound painting orchestra often. And I'm not so good on this side, you know, sitting because I'm used to being the composer. So when I sit in there and I'm making error after error because I'm looking at the sound painter too, and all of them basically have been my student at one point or another, and I look at them and go, oh yeah, that could have been cleaner, and then I miss the gesture,
yeah.
You know. But one thing I don't do is stop. And when I make a mistake, I keep right on going. I have no problem with that. I'm really good at that. So now let's imagine that you have this minimalism going on, you know, and I like. Right now, everything is fleeting. It's going to jump away from us in a live composition. But now, there's something going on. I like it, whether it's how you seat it, whether it's some sound you're making, whatever. And I say, I'm like, maybe it's that last bit of minimalism. I say, I like it, so I think, okay, I'm going to keep it. Hopefully, this is memory one. Now you have to remember it. Okay? So I make a memory out of it and ask you to record it immediately. All right?
What's the memory?
Yeah, so hoku, you have to say, right, who, now what, you go, this is, what's going on, memory one. Now you record it, okay? So let's make a memory out of a long tone. That's a whole group long tone, play, continue, whole group, this is memory one, and you'll memorize the notes you're singing.
Okay, I was going to ask, is the memory the actual pitch, or yeah, the fact that we're singing a long tone?
It's, in this case, it's both. It's a long tone,
okay,
and it's that long tone.
Okay.
That's a good question, because at some other times in memory, like if I said whole group pointillism, give a play gesture, there might be a quality of how you're playing the instrument.
Well, could you take a memory and then, like, slow it down?
Absolutely. Or not only that, but attach it to point-to-point. Point-to-point with memory one.
Right, okay.
And now you take these things that are already recorded and you're pushing them around in some way in your composition. Yeah. And now you take a little piece of maybe what you did, you know, in the memory as they continue. Then I ask the rest of the group to relate, you know, to relate to it really quietly. And you hear some kind of mirroring or, you know, contradiction of what you're doing, some kind of a note. You know what I mean? So this, once you have this with, it's endless how you can phrase and put these things together. So let's try it. Let's make a memory. Right. Let's try it with minimalism. But while it's going on, don't lose the integrity of what you're doing. As I'm signing, don't lose the integrity. Keep the, you know, as you seem to do something, go drop down in sound. So let's try it. Minimalism, same thing. Again, loud, great intensity.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
What else in my memory, too, is do nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I could ask you to do the same thing, certainly. But otherwise, when I'm signing the memory, it's exactly what... See you later. You're welcome. So, you know, if you're in silence, you stay in silence.
Right.
That's a good question.
Because you could, like, transfer his memory to
us. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Absolutely. Real simply, rest of the group synchronize.
Okay.
So you go, good, 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 you know, good, good. And I step forward, and this is one of the ways to synchronize. There's three sort of ways to get started with this. And this one will give you a chance to do the, to work your way into this. Any questions? Why don't you move in now? So I thought it was, you know, interesting choices when we were doing stuff earlier, and you made the choice that, you know, it's not, there's no, I'm not going to say, hey, that's not good. You know, what are you doing? You're fired, you know? It's working with who you are as a performer. So, or as a person, you know, it takes who you are and says, okay, then take these gestures and put yourself in these gestures. And that's when you're the best at this. Not when you're trying to imitate somebody else, but when you're doing something that's who you are. There was a little girl named Emily, and she studied sound painting for 4 years with another sound painting teacher. the school, private music school in New York. And then this man, Jody, brought her, it was just to an orchestra rehearsal, to show her, like, show me, like, hey, you gotta check out what this little girl's doing. She's 11 years old. You gotta see how well she is, how well she works with sound painting. So she was fluent with about 250 signs. And I mean fluent. You know, she hears something, she thinks of 30 different things to do with it. And so I watched her in rehearsal, and I was like, I had to join my orchestra for a year. She was a paid sound painter, you know, as a guest sound painter. She played clarinet, not too good. And she was only 11. So she kind of, you know, that didn't work so well, the clarinet. But so in one concert, first time she performed with us, we were in a concert in New York, in this downtown theater. And I asked her to come up, you know? And so she took half the group, and I took the other half of the group. And she was brilliant. I mean, she was just brilliant. Even somebody in the audience did something, like accidentally, they were just coming in or something like that, and they bumped into something. And in theater, there's this imaginary wall between you as the performers and the audience called the fourth wall. Do you know about this? The fourth wall. And so in sound painting, we break the fourth wall. If somebody does something out in the audience, well, they're game. We can go after them because it's because this is a multidisciplinary ensemble with actors and dancers and musicians. So we go after people in a nice way. You know, so this man tricked and made a loud sound. And so Emily was standing here with her group, and I was over here with my group. That's about 25 or 30 in my orchestra. And she just goes, you know, and that means to heckle. So her group started yelling at the audience. You know, or this guy, you know. And I mean, it was done, it was really well done, you know. And so then I brought in something else to help support what she was doing. And, you know, nothing ever really, like, you know, surprises me in that way, that I'm not ready for it because I've been doing this 30-something years. So when these things happen, it's just another piece of material to work with, you know. Including one time I was, another, just a quick story, working with palettes, which are any piece of composed or rehearsed music, text, choreography, visual design. And I've been working with my orchestra at the Paris Conservatory, and I had all these palettes, notated music and choreography I had done. And I have to keep track of them because I have four actors right here, you know, dancers more upstage and towards back, and then the ensemble of musicians kind of in between. Lots of different types of, you know, a classical musician can play next to a jazz musician, next to, you know, a folk musician, next to a rap musician, next to a, you know, someone that comes from some other folk background. You know, a dancer can be a tap dancer, can be a ballet dancer, can be, you know, a ballroom dancer, can, you know, they can all be in the same ensemble. So the musicians are all mixed up in this group in France. And I went to start the piece. I had all these palettes here, so here I am, the audience is there, I'm starting the piece. And I use this gesture called play, can't play, we won't get into it, but it's a complex gesture. And I get in, so I go off to throw out for my first, and you know what's going to happen, right? And I hit the music really hard, and went, wham! You know, the very first thing, you know? And they went all over the floor, you know, the palettes, and just a big mess. So I went, I said, actor one. I just went right with it. The actors are here. I said, actor one, stand up. Walk tempo slow. Come down stage. Relate to. And then Jerome stood up. Started walking down stage, speaking in French, relating to the music stand. And what I had just done. The rest of the actors, the other three actors, stand up, walk tempo slow, come down stage, relate to actor one, slowly enter. So then they stand up and come down stage, towards the edge of the stage, relating to the actor that's speaking about the music stand. I said, the rest of the group, stand up, walk tempo slow, come down stage, slowly enter. The entire orchestra stood up. Walked to the edge of the stage. I was off stage in this little small stage on this performance space. So they're all at the edge of the stage. It's like 30 people in this big crowd. Then I put them in this thing called launch mode, which makes all the gestures happen as I sign them. Like you sing a long tone as I, or you do pointism, or you laugh, or you speak, you do air sounds, or you whistle, you do minimalism. You know, all these things happen as I make the sign. So I'm putting the group in launch mode, and I'm doing this really quick stuff. But this group at the edge of the stage, I'm doing hits and all kinds of things. And the group is responding, very crisp, really good group. And then I just had them continue with something and said, you know, whole group sit. I said, continue with this, whole group sit down and slowly enter. And they kept doing what they're doing and backed up and sat down, you know. And I mean, it was really cool. You know? I would have never thought that. And at the end of the evening, someone from the audience came up and said, wow. That was something. I've never seen anybody do that before. You know, knock over a music stand and make a piece out of it. And they asked me how long I had rehearsed it, and I told them a month, you know. And I actually had rehearsed it for a month. But I hadn't, of course. The only thing I rehearsed with them is that no matter what happens, keep going. As we say in sound painting, when in doubt, don't lay out. You know, you always keep going. When you're not sure, keep playing. Because if you're not sure what's going on, if you keep playing, I can do something with it. So let's do this. How much time do we have?
We got maybe another, let's say another 5 to 7.
Okay, let's go.
And we might want to have a little time for questions too, so maybe say 5.
Let's do this and then we'll do something. There's so many of these gestures, you know. I mean, there's 43 here that we had another half hour or something like that. We could really take 2 hours and rehearse this and then go to a piece tonight that's like 15 to 20 minutes long that looks like we've been rehearsing for a long time. Because if you are solid with gestures, and I know how to compose with it, and you're solid with how I'm communicating and how I'm speaking to you, we can make a piece, no problem. This part is that you have to know how to compose with it. It's two different worlds. Following the gestures is as a performer is one world, and the world of composing it is another one. Let's do these interdisciplinary gestures, because when there's actors and dancers and musicians and visual artists sitting in the orchestra, they're interdisciplinary gestures I might use sometimes. So I'll say, we'll try this. Laugh. You know, so hold it. So then the whole group would laugh. There was something going on with one of the actors, and I might want to say scan with laughter, or minimalism with laughter, or point to point with laughter, over the top, loud with intensity. You know? you know, or the one I was showing before, you know, like laugh with a murderous intent. Or a loving laugh, you know? Tons of that kind of stuff. So now, air sounds like shh, shh, that type of thing. So hold air sounds and shh. Right, exactly. The rhythm is up to you how you do it. And then whistling, so hold the whistle. And then the other interdisciplinary one I often use is speaking, so whole group speak.
Okay.
And speak, not in my direction, but not about me, okay? think about speaking as something that, you know, if you want to speak and tell a story, in sound painting that's called narrative, or for musicians this means melody. So you say, you know, actors improvise with narrative. Now they tell a story. Otherwise, by default, they're speaking something called word salad, which means to be nonsensical, or make music with words. So, you know, whole group point to point is speaking. Oh, what? You know, not going, oh, yes, you know, today I got up and I couldn't find my shoes. You know, if you do that, first of all, in a live composition, the audience goes right to you. That's like a solo. This is improvised. It means to take a full-blown improvisation. That this is your space. So I default that you speak in a more, you know, musical way. So let's try speaking one more time and be loud be intense and be right at the end of my hands and think about it more musically. Like I'm opening the doors and there's a bunch of people speaking. Okay, that's right. That's by default how we do it. Exactly. Yeah, and you hear repetition of things, a little bits and pieces. Perfect. But I would work a little bit on it before concert. Because it's really hard for musicians to go point to point with speaking. And you point to the musician sees me. Yeah. And what did you say?
Pizza.
So if you would have to speak with this theater voice, so then I would have to get you used to saying whatever it is, like, if you say, like, hello, you wouldn't go, hello, because they won't hear you in the back. So that's the part about being a sound major where it's multidisciplinary, that as a composer, you have to know how to speak all of the languages of each discipline, or you'll have a weak discipline to compose with. So why don't everybody stand up for a second? Listen, we'll wrap it up this way. So you'll have some of this to work with. You know? So watch out, because we're doing this sort of dance class. So stagger the line a little bit. So the limit is hundreds and hundreds of people are doing this now. And I, you know, I'm really happy about it, because as I said, it was something I started doing for out of frustration. You know, it's become kind of what I do with my whole life. It's something that came out of frustration. So whenever I'm teaching other people to be sound painters, which I do a lot of, it's like a dance class. So you're making a gesture, so let's see it. Show me. And you'll notice that what I do is almost like a baseball player, the pitcher who is kind of getting ready to pitch. You know, whenever you see a baseball game and the pitcher goes into action, the whole field snaps to you. So you've got to snap your orchestra. So if you just do this, you're not going to snap your orchestra. Ready to get ready to go. You have to go. You break the hips and you boom. So let's try it. Here we go. And yeah. Perfect. Really good. And then you're going to be ready, because that's the instrument you're composing with. So let's go over. Long tone. Don't hit each other. That would be without contact. One more time, whole group. Long time. Pianissimo. Hip fist is closed. It's like Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. So, you know, and so in volume phase, it's like going up. Good. And you're right on the arm. So this part's sliding up and down the arm. Okay, so again, whole group. Long time. Now, playing kind of comes from like bowling or something. I don't know where I got this from. And it's just like you step 1 foot forward and then you throw your hands out. And the ictus, you know, where the beat is right there. So it's a little snap at the end. Okay, let's try it. Just play. Yeah, good. So now you're going to sound paint yourself. So in other words, you're going. And then off is like sliding along a bunch of poles and grabbing the last one. Okay, here we go. You can look on YouTube. Like, if you want to pursue this in any kind of way, first of all, I think the library is going to order a workbook, but this, I mean, look on YouTube or get in touch. So beyond my visit here, so it doesn't just like happen and it's gone. You want to pursue, you just go to soundpainting.com and email me. What's happening? You know, I'd like to look at this a little bit more. So just so you know. So let's open it up for some questions.
Yeah.
Who do you, in the beginning, it's like, you know, what's this guy doing? You know, it's, how can this, you know, you start with a long term, it seems so simple. Oh, I understand this. No, this is easy. And then kind of, you know, pedagogically speaking, when it gets to this point where you go, this is number one, it's like the fun and games are over. Now you start to realize this is a serious language. And I do get in kind of trouble with other composers that are working in a more traditional way, whether it's graphic or whether it's with a program like Sibelius and Finale or Cakewalk or something, you know, is that some people refuse to call this composition. So that's an interesting thing for me. I call what this is live composing. Why? It's because I'm constantly hands-on with it. You know, I am structuring and moving everything around. I'll stand up here and let things go on for a while, sure. You know, just listen. It's not about like me imposing my ideas and constantly, you know, harassing the players. I'm composing with the results, you know. So there is a bit of a sort of a discussion that goes on in the world about what composition is. And Butch Morris, who he and I had dinner about half a year ago, and we were speaking about this, and Butch was telling me about what he's had to deal with, you know. But that really doesn't matter, you know. It's composition. So any thoughts, any questions you might want to ask? Can you make a living with this?
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. As a man named Francois Chenault, he's one of the most famous jazz musicians in France, and he's been doing this for 10 years, probably all 10 years, and he's 76 now, you know, and this half, more than half of his work comes from the ensemble. So it really, in the world of education, working with children, think about it, you know, like, what are your instruments, what do you play?
Piano.
Guitar. Bass.
Bass.
Saxophone, trumpet, you know what I mean? It took us a long time to get pretty good at it, right? You know, and so, but we had complex minds when we were kids. You know, everybody knows how to lie and do this and that and the other. We can fool, you know, our parents or, you know, we can fool our friends. I mean, not that fooling is always a great thing, but I mean, just that, you know, we know how to organize ourselves as little kids in a very complex way, but we can't bring that out on an instrument because we're not good enough physically to make it happen. But that's why from this, there's some people that are kind of looking at this. Here's this little girl, Emily, who was a really wonderful composer. She couldn't play clarinet so well, right? But I mean, this was a way to tap into her mind because she could speak the language and compose with this in a very interesting way, quite different than the way I might do it, the way you might do it, anybody else. So I think there's something interesting about that. It's a language for creativity. It's not necessarily, you know, in the world of performance. You can go home and teach your friends how to do this. You might be a CEO. You know, or you might be, you know, working in construction, and then you can study this language, and you can go and stand in front of, you know, the New York Philharmonic if they know how to do this, or one of the sound painting groups and make a piece. You know, and to me that's kind of an interesting part of this. You know, it wasn't my original mission by any means. But any questions? Yeah.
You mentioned that sometimes you have visual artists as well performing with your group, and I was curious how they respond to all the signs that you make.
Yeah, a lot of times, I mean, when I first began working with visual artists, it was really simple. They had big plexiglass things, and they were working as painters. Real easy to, like, do this, you know, kind of thing. But I work most of the time with installation artists. So she or he comes with, they work. First of all, I have to know if they can do what's called a hotspot. And a hotspot is the ability, the visual artist tells you ahead of time, they have to learn the language first with their voice, and then they understand what it means in the head, and then they go home and gather the materials. And an installation artist, as we all know, is, you know, goes into a gallery and installs a piece. Sarah Z, a great installation artist. She spends all year collecting matches and, you know, fishing line and all kinds of little toys and things like that. She's got boxes of these things. She's fantastic. S-Z-E, Sarah Z, look her up. Fantastic. And so she goes into a place and she just installs these spiderweb looking things in the corner, you know. So she has all these materials. Now, if all these materials she could pick up really quick and respond to these gestures that I give them, then that ability to respond to those gestures is called a hotspot in sound painting. So the visual artist can tell you, yes, I have it. This is visual. So if you say Holbrook, that's a visual artist too. When you say long tone, well, I mean, what could, I mean, it could be something like, you know, just dragging a rope across the stage, you know, and leaving it there. And that's a long, you know. Something really simple to think about it is like this. What could this be visually?
Glitter.
Glitter. Yeah. Or it could be a bubble machine. It could be like a disco ball that came on, you know? I mean, it's got to be something that's pointillistic in how it looks, abstract. So all of the gestures are work with the visual arts. When it's minimalism, all the complex gestures, everything. Minimalism, it's a repetition of shape somehow that she or he is installing in space. So they work with hotspots and installations and other kind of stations that they set up around the space. And in a sound painter group, because we're working with dance and movement, just because you might come away from today and go, well, yeah, there's a dancer. You know, if the dancer's moving, you know, does she always or he have to look at the sound painter? And the answer is no. So dancers are moving and turning and whatnot. And the general rule is, and if you don't see it, you don't respond to it. So then the sound painter sets up situations where if you're a dancer and you're facing away from the audience, facing upstage, that might be the time that I ask something else to happen to the group that can see me. So I base my live choreography on sometimes the fact that somebody can't see me. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how you compose your movements. They have both of those worlds, when you can see and when you can't see. Questions?
So for like an orchestra or something that plays this like often, like as a musician say, how long does it take you to learn the like enough vocabulary to be able to do this?
One day with good sound panel. One rehearsal. In fact, I approached the American Composers Orchestra in New York about this. They didn't give it to me. But I said, hey, I can come in and you give me 3 hours and I can make a piece, 20-minute piece for you that evening. They didn't believe me, so. It was a number of years ago and they didn't know my work. But one day. But if I have the project that we're doing now, it's one of the reasons I'm here, is working with a great composer named Anthony Braxton. And he's writing what's called palettes. And that's this notated music. And I'm coming in March to work with Art Park. So it's going to be Anthony's palettes. We're going to rehearse with the group. They're going to learn the language, probably few rehearsals, you know, probably a few with Anthony's music in it because it's complex. But that's 2 or 3 rehearsals, and then we're going to do it. You know, we haven't planned this yet, but I know it's going to be something like that because we've worked together before. So, but if I, like I was saying, on tour, I've done an hour and a half of rehearsal. But I've had 2 other people that know sound painting that use them as an example. I did a piece in Barcelona where I had 10 minutes to teach 1,500 people. I didn't know this, you know. I was flown down from Sweden. I had been given an award for sound painting in this it's an award for theater. And so I was given an award for my work in theater and sound painting. And in that award ceremony, I sound painted the audience some to show them a little bit about what I was doing. And then the next year, they were doing the version of the Tonys for the Academy Awards of Spain. And I didn't know that. I mean, I my French is good, my Swedish is good, and my Spanish is so-so. So I couldn't read my contract so well. So I arrived in Barcelona, and a friend of mine, Elsa, because I had been working in Barcelona for a long time. I had a poet's orchestra there and another resounding orchestra. And so Elsa picked me up, who was a clown that works with me. And she was driving me around, and I see these big banners all over Barcelona. And I said, "What is that?" She goes, "That's what you're doing, you know?" And I said, "What?" You know? So it started at 1 o'clock at night, and this is the only time I've ever been nervous and stepping out. Because what I did was I brought Elsa with me, and I put her back behind me, and I walked out on the stage. I was the entertainment, you know? They had, like, you know, 8 or 9 television cameras across the back, with 1,500 people, you know, seven on the floor, and, you know, the rest of them up in these balconies. And so I would sign to Elsa. I'm just, you know, and when I found out that everybody out there was in the industry, I was more comfortable, because I knew I wasn't going to have a big conservative crowd that might be a little hard to deal with. But it would still work. So I would turn to Elsa, and I would go, and then stop her, and then turn to the audience, and without speaking a word, go. And they got it, no problem. I turned to Elsa, I'd do something else. I turned to Elsa, I'd do something else, go back and forth to the audience. And then I began a piece without telling them I was even doing a piece. And it was really, really interesting, you know, to have these 700 people on the floor, so when I scan, you know, I'm using two arms and kind of like standing really, you know, it was. Just that gesture alone was really fun to work around. Anyway, we worked out really, really wonderfully. So the learning curve was boom. That was 13 signs.
Right, but I mean, you know, you say there are like thousands or whatever. So
yeah, there's over.
To learn all of them in case.
Well, it's a good question, because what is a really fine sound painting group? What is the vocabulary? About 250. Because if you think about it, you know, if you're going to write a novel, and the assignment is, you know, for yourself, you say to yourself, "I'm going to write a novel that has every word in the English dictionary." You know, not even Joyce could do that. You know, so you don't do that. You know, you don't use everything that's in the kitchen to cook dinner that night. You know,
but the group has. I mean, so. Is there a situation where it's like, "Oh, I wish I taught them this because I'd like to use that now, but I didn't"?
Yeah, that happens when I'm working in groups and it's kind of a quick hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens. I have to sort of pull myself back a little bit, and then I'll catch myself doing something. So if I make a sign that they don't know, what they do learn is the gesture that the ensemble gives back to me, and not what you're thinking. It's not this or this. "Hey, what you doing?" Yeah. It's they do this to their head and back. It means re-sign. I didn't get a phrase. So if I do come up with the gesture, then the number of people in the ensemble just do this, and I'll go, "Okay, and I'll move on."
I'm sorry, we have to shut it down. But let me just say, there is the FGE thing at 5:15. Some of you now are all primed for that. Walter will be back to work with Aardvark in the spring. I'll let you all know about that, so you can come, because that's part of the idea. You can come to rehearsals and stuff and see a bunch of old guys what we do with this. We have worked with Walter before, and a lot of my group is a core group that's been around for a long time. So we will now see what our learning curve is to learn the rest of the signals of the end. Thank you very much.
Yeah.